Yeah, now we're recording. All right, we are recording. Bucket list item for me today, because I am at Taco Lou in Jacksonville, Florida, with Don Nickel, the godfather, as I've been told, the godfather of that's what I was told.
No way.
Everybody that's going to start a concept like this, like anywhere, at least in the Southeast, they all come to Taco Lou. And so Don's been on the podcast before, but I told him before, this is on my bucket list, so I made it. I'm here. We're hanging out. We're drinking beer, and we're going
to
talk.
So nice to see you face to face.
So, okay, here's the deal. Every, like, Pop Menu is now a sponsor of our podcast. And I have this, like, script I read to introduce every episode. I record an intro before, like, this part, and I do a Pop Menu intro. But in lieu of that, tell me, here's their ad. Like, you're a Pop Menu customer. You've been a customer a while. What do you like about Pop Menu?
I have been a customer. Well, we just found out today that since 2019, and we got in on this. You know, the Cisco guy brings it, and these guys bring people in all the time. And I'm like, ugh. But I sat through this. It was perfect timing because I needed a website that was something that I could handle between running food to one table to the next, you know, instead of having to call somebody and say, I want to add this picture or whatever. So the Pop Menu, well, the coolest thing or the best thing about it, I think, is, like, you just met Sarah, and anybody you deal with, and Ryan, anybody you deal with is as nice and as cool as they can be. They want to help. The website has each item can be, you know, you can pop on it, which is cool, like you have like a like button, or you can put a review for each and every item on the menu, which is really cool, because if you're looking at, you know, the street corn and you see it's got 500 reviews, all of which are outstanding, you're going to want to get it. Or if you're, you know, the jury's out on an enchilada, and you read the reviews, and, you know, we don't hide a lot of reviews, we don't get a lot of really shitty ones, but if we did, you know, like I was saying, I try and answer those, and I'll post them too, but I can just take any picture of any food and add it to the menu on the website, and it's simple. Now, we're on Toast now for our POS, and we weren't on Toast at the time, so we've had some issues with integration coming in backwards that way, and it's just one of those things where if I want to fix it, it's going to take me more time than I want to put into it, and it's not an issue. Like, if I need to change prices, I can only change prices in two different places. But Pop Menu has been has been great and super simple. Even my managers can get in and make changes or turn, like, if for some reason we have no guacamole or no a certain fish, they go in, click a button, and that fish special goes away from being online. Now, obviously you can't do that on paper, and after COVID I never thought we were gonna have menus again, paper menus, but we do. But Pop Menu's been great. I'm pleased with it, and, you know, we don't have any plans going anywhere else.
Well, there you go. There's the Pop Menu ad for this episode. Now I don't have to record one.
That's good. Awesome.
So they're a new partner of ours. We've never had partners ever.
So how does that work for you guys?
Just referrals. There's no, like, revenue sharing. It's
but
just
if you're like if
keep the mic keep the
you're
mic cut,
you,
close.
You're you people like me who weren't on Pop Menu. How do they know anything about it? Is on the site? Schedulefly site, or
just the other day, if you log into Schedulefly now on the desktop, there's a new tab. Tab we've added in forever, and it's called S-Fly Partners, and it has Pop Menu. You click it, and it's got them, and it has a company called, it's actually called Must Have Menus, which is why I asked you where you get your menus. So Must Have Menus is a school business out of, they're in Bend, Oregon. They got like 12 people. They're kind of like us. They're small. Been doing it about a dozen years, but they have all these templates. So, like, if you're like, how do I simply, you know, change my paper menu, or like design a paper menu or whatever, like they're just freaking great people. So those are the two that we rolled out with, and then we have a couple other companies that we're talking to, including, this is kind of cool, you got any people in your kitchen that wear Crocs?
No.
You don't? They have Crocs, has like a Crocs at work, like a hospitality shoe that they
yeah, a little heavier duty than.
Yeah, it doesn't have the holes and the gibbets and all that stuff. Yep. But so, long story short, they're out in Boulder, and we have a lot of customers out there.
Crocs is in Boulder?
Yeah, they're in Boulder. And right, so yeah, they're actually going to, we're talking to them too about starting out with just like a discount offer to all of our customers, but then having basically a partnership with them where, like, our customers can go buy Crocs and like at some, you know, good price and all this kind of stuff.
The reason you don't want people wearing it in your kitchen is because the holes and burning yourself and dropping a knife that go right through it.
Yeah, they've got those ones that are they're designed for kitchen people now.
So oh,
they're,
cool.
They're thick,
no, I didn't know that.
No holes. They're thick. They've got the non-slip soles. Yeah. Like, and I was like, hey man, we got 250,000 people that work in restaurants. You want to have a way to
tap
market to them?
Right.
And they're like,
and,
yeah.
And really, for us, because you know, we don't have uniforms. I mean, nobody's wearing a chef's coat back there. But
yeah,
but. You know, to tell somebody to go buy a $150 pair of kitchen clogs or whatever it's not going to work. So if there's a cheaper version of a non-skid sort of safer shoe, that's definitely something that everybody's. You know, you can wear Vans all day long, but you're still going to burn your feet and drop a knife on it. But I'd like for them to all have a little better footwear back there. But you know, it has to be the right price. You can't
well,
just
okay
mandate a $100 pair of shoes to these kids.
It's actually a good. It brings me to a good. A good question. But before, I don't want to forget this. When are you going out to Red Rocks?
I think it's the end of July.
Okay. Do you already have a place to stay?
Nope.
You know people? Oh, dude.
I don't have flights yet. I'm pretty sure I'm going.
Okay.
Tickets.
Okay. I'm going to hook you up
okay,
with
good.
Some freaking awesome people out there. There
okay.
are so many amazing restaurant people that
right.
we are super fortunate to serve at Schedule Fly that live out there. And I spec like Dave Query, he owns Big Red F restaurants. They probably got 15. I mean,
Big Red F.
It's freaking awesome. Dude, I'm like, he's become a good friend. I'm going out there, was it week after next?
Yeah.
I'm staying in his home. He's not going to be there.
With your skis?
He's not going to be there.
Oh,
like,
cool.
He just
wow.
lets me stay in his I'm telling you, like, the people out there are
I wasn't going to let you
so
in here without me being here
you,
this time.
You got to, we got to follow up on that. And,
okay.
And I want you to, there's some great people that you'll love out there. Probably a lot of them are going to that show, too.
I'll probably
too,
be there a couple nights, but I'm going to drive up to Casper and spend a couple, like my brother's got a restaurant in Casper that's 45 seats, but it's a little barbecue place like Sticky Fingers used to be. And I've been once, but it was a long time ago. And Debbie's never been, so it's a long way to go to get to Casper.
It's a long way to go.
And you can't go in the winter.
Does he need some help with scheduling
high.
His staff?
He needs, I hope he doesn't hear this, he needs a lot of help with everything, but I don't think he's smart enough to sign
well,
somebody up like you.
So, okay, you,
sorry,
you talked about, like, the staff, and, like, okay, you can't really have them, you know, make them buy these expensive shoes. What do you, have you changed what you do, or are you continuing to change what you do to try to, like, find creative ways to reward people, or to keep people, like, employee benefit, whatever you want to call it, like, I hear like more and more people talking about all these like different things they're doing because it's just so hard to keep really good people now.
It has become the number one thing for us and for a lot of people here. Ben Grushel, who's a customer of y'all's from Market 32 and all the fish camps, and I had a conversation a long time ago about because they, you know, years ago they talked about the minimum wage going to $15 in Florida, which we've had a higher minimum wage in Florida than nationally forever, and. Like in reports at Sticky Fingers, I'd have an asterisk by my numbers because we were at 3-something, you know, 50% more per hour for 80% of your staff, the servers, than all the other restaurants. So if my labor looked high, they're kind to put an asterisk on there. Go, well, he's paying instead of whatever it was, $3.15 an hour,
right.
We're paying $4.25.
So Florida was always. I didn't realize that.
You know, it's been
because you don't have any state income tax.
Maybe.
I guess that's what.
Maybe. Yeah. And so they're talking about it going to $15 an hour and years ago. Now it already got signed and passed, and we're at 11 for minimum wage. But the biggest thing that we need to do here, we're not great at it, is to retain people. And hiring is one thing. Like if you get somebody in the door, like, you know, I see an application with great handwriting on it, I'm excited.
Dude,
right.
You told your manager you saw. Look at what was that an application?
Yeah, it was an application, but nobody writes like that. I'm
so
like,
really good handwriting is a good. God, that's amazing.
Well, I mean, that's just me
no,
being
it's,
silly
no,
to
but,
Lauren, but the application was great. I mean, she's worked at a place for 5 years and whatever, and she wants to work here. But I'm like, man, look at the handwriting of this kid. You don't get that all the time. And the biggest thing, we had a manager meeting this morning. We have one every Thursday morning, and it's like our new. Number one job is trying to keep these people. And if it's, you know, incentives from the bar people or whatever, and there's no really written down way to do it, you got to be a place that people want to work. The money's here because we're busy, so that helps. And I think a lot of people will stay at a place and work for some schmuck for a long time if there's money, but you still really even can't do that. You can walk out this door right now any one of these kids who work in the kitchen or the bar could walk out and go, they wouldn't have to knock on two doors before they'd get another job somewhere for the same or more money. You know what I mean? It's like that, this market has become so competitive basically since COVID. And people, you know, used to be your highest paid guys in the kitchen. Nobody even starts for that anymore. I mean, we're paying, nobody wants to walk in the door for less than $20 an hour. Like, look, we're just making $3 tacos. I mean, there's not a, you know, there's not a huge, I mean, it's skill and all that, but you know, it's getting to the point where that's our, you know, that is our biggest, because you, when you lose two people in a row or two people within a short amount of time, then you're in deep. So it is a big focus for us as managers to retain people and keep them. And so the money is always something we're reviewing. And we have a 401k package. We had a simple IRA for a long time before we realized that we had too many people to have a simple, you know,
It's 100.
And we were over 100 people for about 3 years when we realized it, but I didn't get in trouble. Knock on wood. IRS was actually kind of nice about it. And, you know, but only, that's a stretch for a lot of people in this industry. And if we have 120 people that work here, 25 of them qualify for health insurance, the ACA, and they're full-time. So any manager or full-time employee has a shot at insurance and the 401k, which I love to do it. I mean, it's free money, but you don't want to do it if you know you're going to be here for a year or two. It's got to be a career sort of choice.
I always feel like it's hard to get people, younger people, to even think that far ahead. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can run models and go, look, if you put this amount, like, this is what it's going to do after compounding, but like, it's hard. Like,
but it's, you know, the only people who really, it's the full-time managers and kitchen managers who do it. There are very few people who are servers or who would even qualify for the 401k.
What is the, who do you do your 401k through?
John Hancock is who manages it, but Raymond James is who we started all that stuff with. Okay. I'm not really sure how.
And do you match like up to it? Like,
I match, if you deduct 3%, I match 3. If you go to 5%, I go to 4. And I think if you go to 6%, I go to 5.
And you, okay, so Raymond James?
Raymond James is my...
You like him?
I love him, and I've had him for a long time, but I think when we switched to the 401k from the simple, we had to switch to John Hancock. Now, Raymond James is still involved, but yeah. John Hancock, it's complicated.
I got you.
But the 401k is a whole different ball of wax, and it's...
Yeah. I mean, that's... there's not. Simple's good for a lot of restaurants because it's that 100. Like, most people don't know what a simple IRA is, by the way. And, but it's like a super easy thing to do if you've got under 100 staff or whatever.
It's limitations are different from a 401k, which is, you know, the guy's like, look, a 401k is going to blow your mind when it comes to the admin costs and the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, if we don't do that, we can't do anything else. And, you know, getting anybody to save money is next to impossible, especially at this age group that we're in.
It's super hard.
But we've got, I don't know how many actually are in it, because some people have left. You know, some kids who were here for years have moved on, and all they do is either keep it there or they have to roll it over.
They roll over IRA.
You know, you can't just put money into a 401k. It's got to come out of your, it's not like a Roth where you can just throw money into it, but it's got to be a deduction. So, but it's, I feel a lot like an adult when we talk about stuff like this, so it's pretty cool. It doesn't happen to me. It doesn't happen to me very often.
Yeah, man, but you know, it's I'm asking this stuff because we're trying to figure out ways. Like, Crocs is an example of this, but there's other ideas I have around stuff like that. Where, okay, so we have 250,000 restaurant people, and they log into Schedulefly every day.
Yeah.
Anything we put on there, they're going to see.
Yeah.
So, and we have, you know, so I'm trying to figure out if there's ways that, like, we could go to, like, John Hancock and go, look, you've got 6,000 restaurants, 250,000 people. Like, why don't you enable
use that
some,
as a pool?
Yeah.
And, you know, I always wanted to have,
like,
health
that
insurance,
you know,
for
right
back at Sticky Fingers and when I, or wherever. But the discriminatory process, and not discrimination in a bad sense necessarily, but you had to have like 80% of your staff participate in order for anybody to get insurance. And, you know, when you've got 60 or 70 people and 60 or 70 of them are under 20, they're not going to do that. They're still on their parents or whatever, and they're not going to put, you know, you remember, you were bulletproof You never went to the doctor or got, maybe, I don't know, health insurance when you were a kid. But, you know, when it gets older, it's way more important. So
it's definitely more important.
And it wasn't until Sticky Fingers had enough employees to say, look, we're going to have a policy and not everybody here has to do it. But whoever wants to do it can do it. And so that helped a lot. But that kind of went away once you're out of, you know, when you're by yourself again like I am. So the whole ACA thing that happened in 2014, I was 100% completely not ready for it all to happen. And you just kept thinking, I kept thinking to myself, this isn't going to, they're not going to make me do this. And they did. But, you know, I feel like an adult being able to help provide insurance for people who work here. And because they pay a little and I pay a lot of it. It's just the way it's worked out. And, you know, if that's what it takes to make people, I wish more people would do it, you know, put it in there. But again, these kids are young and they don't want to spend $30 a paycheck on health insurance, which they may never use, you know, or $15 a paycheck. I don't even know what, I think it's they're the lowest split, I think, is like $47 a month, which is split up twice. So, but you know, you can go higher, but that's just a hard sell on kids who could $27 buy a lot of beer, you know what I mean? So until you get up to the old, actually it doesn't that much anymore. But
then when you get married and you have kids, you're like, I would kill to pay that much.
Right. Oh, exactly. Right. I know.
So tell me about, I want to talk about this building because I was reading your menu and I was reading the story. And I mean, it's just such a cool story. And y'all really.
The room you're in now was added in 2002. By a lady who her mother owned this back in the 60s, and she owned it after the famous Alpha painter who started in 1947. Alpha's a lady. Imagine a woman entrepreneur in the 40s in America. She owned this place, fried chicken, cream peas, you know, served in a skillet. She also owned a place called the Copper Kettle on the oceanfront. So here's this lady in the 40s who owns, just an incredible entrepreneur. And the lady she sold the restaurant to, I think in 68, was Johansson. Oh, her daughter is Kathy and Marvin Martin, who owned this beautiful restaurant on the oceanfront, sold that to a developer, and then bought this back in, I don't know when, late 90s or whatever. Shut it down. And this, you know, all this is all cypress. This roof in here. And we put the bar, but it used to be a copper top bar because it's copper. The original building is the same as this porch right here. So the bar, they used to call it the skinny bar. Like if you were sitting at the bar and you wanted to leave, you'd have to get up and make yourself skinny to walk behind everybody. And I've heard a million times since I've been in this building, we were kids here, we'd just get hammered. And the guy that owned it after Miss Johansson would come walking around, they'd just open one of these windows and fall out into the bushes and run off to the beach. So it's been here, 1947 is when she opened it, and it's been, you know, it's been in this weird log cabin state forever. And then in 2000, they built this, which is why I walked into it in 2012 with, you know, pretty up-to-date fire and electric codes and stuff like that, and a pretty up-to-date kitchen, I think. Anything around 2000, I don't think, you know, you really had to come here with a boatload of money to fix it up. But
so you had Sticky Fingers down here.
Mm-hmm.
When did you exit that?
2007 was my last year. We opened Atlantic Beach, where Pose is now, in 99. And in 2004, we opened one in Bay Meadows. And then there was one about to open at the airport, which I didn't need to do it because the sale was already in the works and going through. And so I got 2005, it was sold. And I was just sort of absorbed into the corporate structure. I thought for sure I was going to get the first guy to get fired. But somehow they didn't. And I ended up being, like, in the marketing department, I helped the lady in Charleston, who's one of my all-time favorite people, with six or seven of these stores, like, from Augusta down to here. And ultimately, I ended up at all of them. Like, if there was a big event in Chattanooga, I'd be up there. Savannah, obviously, we'd be there during Masters Week, out on the street, giving stuff away. And
yeah.
It was fun. It was a fun little year that I was doing it. And, year and a half. And then so 2007, the fall, it was just, like, my time was done. They had enough of me and really the last two or three guys who were still there. So that whole time that I was traveling with Sticky, I was going to Wilmington, North Carolina, where K38 is.
Yeah.
And this, that place is, there's no question that place is the impetus for me wanting to do this.
K38.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
my God. That place is legendary.
Like, when we open here, if you're done with work, yeah. Like, where are you going? Going to Mellow Mushroom. That's all we, this, it's just automatic.
That was it.
In Wilmington, it was going to K38. And I'm like, well, what the hell is K38? And they're like, oh, it's this little place. And it was just like our first location. It was tiny.
Yep.
And there's not one dude that worked in that place. All stunningly beautiful women. I'm telling you. Bartenders, hosts, servers, staff. Yeah. You'd get a look back in the kitchen, you'd see some
I lived some in Wilmington in 1997.
It's crazy. So, and I thought, man, this, and I had one of those, they had a little fried, little bar fish talking about and a pretty good tequila selection. I thought, this is amazing. And then as Sticky grew and I was traveling from one to the other, I found Cabo Fish Taco.
Uh-huh.
In the
in Charlotte.
Yeah, in the, what do they call it? The old...
Oh.
It's
in over in Noda.
Noda, yeah, right.
Yeah.
North Davidson, right?
Yeah,
but that
North
was
Davidson.
The old textile mill area, right? Wasn't mm-hmm. that all textile stuff?
Yeah, I mean, they were the first thing over there, if I remember correctly. Like,
you know, tiny little place, no liquor license.
Uh-uh.
I had a grilled mahi taco with grilled pineapple on it, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. Like, every place here in town has a fish taco. Sliders had a fish taco. Campeachy Bay had a fish taco. And I thought, man, we should have a place with a lot of fish tacos and a lot of tequila. And between K38 and Cabo Fish Taco, that this whole plan sort of came. And so then it became my plan or job to hit every taco place I could find from... You know, Ballantyne to Concord to Augusta to Wilmington and everywhere. Just, you know, and obviously this menu is far more complicated than the one 15 years ago because we had 6 tacos on it and a couple other things, which just sort of evolved from there.
You know, God, I haven't been to K38 in a long time. Cabo Fish Taco brings up something that I want to ask you about, which is growth, because they're in this, like, artsy, you know, sort of. I mean that area was definitely went through some gentrification because I mean, like, I don't think anything.
I think
like,
it's surrounded by art galleries. When
yeah,
I was there.
That's all it was, yeah. And that was Cabo Fish. But it's like a really, it's there's a lot of character,
yeah.
Right? You're building tons of character. The whole story on your thing is all about, you know. I mean, it's an amazing character in this. But well, so Cabo Fish Taco, and I don't know them. I don't know anything. It may be doing really well and being wildly successful, but they opened in Ballantyne like a few years ago.
Oh, did
like
they?
Yeah, but it's like Ballantyne, everything there is brand new.
Right.
Like, there's no character. I mean, they're actually underneath a parking, like there's like a parking deck.
Yeah.
And on the ground floor facing the road, they put 2 restaurants in there.
Huh.
Cabo and a Potbelly sandwich place.
They're in Blacksburg, Virginia. Too,
I mean,
right?
Blacksburg's probably maybe they've got character
there. I
think
that was first.
Like, I feel like I'm always curious about like when you have a restaurant and you're in a place that's got like tons of character and it's like authentic and genuine, and then you're like you take that and you put that in this sterile thing. Like, I don't see how that because part of this.
Yeah.
Like if you said like let's go. Blow up taco, like it'd be hard to replicate the authenticity of what you're doing here.
That old building we were in, which had been probably 10 restaurants in, you know, 4 or 5 restaurants in as many years, it was the Grapevine forever, a little piano bar. And then it was a bunch of different things. And you know, you move in and people are like, I don't see how long this is going to last. It had character. It's in a little champ, you know, this little shitty building. You see on the back where the wall is cut out for the coolers and all that, which is now a kitchen. But you know, you can imagine, I get, you know, plans and every day on, hey, we're opening this place in a certain part of town. And it is the same thing. It's a brand new, it's next to a new Walmart. It's next to Target. I'm like, man, that just doesn't seem like it's going to fit. There's a couple places in town that I would love to be in. You know, we're this close to doing a second location. It would have been character for days. Same old building kind of thing. I don't have any interest in Well, really, I don't have interest in expanding, I don't think. I just feel like this is plenty. Some people may mistake me for being lazy, but I don't think so, though. I mean, I think if I open another restaurant, you know, you don't play golf or see a surfboard of your kids for 2 years. And we've got 130 employees in the summer, and it's a lot. And I couldn't imagine having 2 locations, much less 10 or 100, during COVID. Like, I would have torn my hair out and...
Do you know the story of the NBA and the fisherman? Have you ever heard that parable?
No. NBA?
Yeah, the NBA, like Masters in Business Administration.
Uh-huh.
So, I love it. Every time I always remind myself of this story. Okay, so there's this dude that's he's a business executive, and he's down in Mexico and he's on vacation, and he sees this fisherman down on the shore, and he brings his boat in, and he's like bringing in all these fish, and the guy goes down and he's talking to the fisherman. He's like, "Hey man, like, so you're a fisherman?" "Yeah, yeah." And he goes like, "So you starts asking about his, like, you know, how often do you fish?" He's like, "I go out early in the morning, I fish for a few hours, I come in, I sell my fish in the market, and then I spend, you know, the rest of my day with my family, and we have siesta, and I spend time with my wife and kids, and we have a happy life, and, you know, and then I get up the next morning and I do it again." And the guy's like, "Yeah, man, but
just think,
if you're only fishing for 6 hours a day, if you went to eight, then you could take the extra profits, you could buy a second boat, and when you buy the second boat, then you," and he walks him through, like,
sure,
how like he could turn into this, build this plan, fishing empire. And then he's like, the guy's like, "Yeah, but then what I would do?" He's like, "And then you'll make all this money." He's like, well, then what would I do then? And the MBA is like, "Well, you'd get up in the morning and just do your own thing, whatever you want, maybe fish some, hang out with your family, go to siesta, you know, have a good life." And the guy's like, "Yeah, that's what I do every day, dude." Like,
right.
You know, like, it's this, it's exactly. The, it's the idea that, like, there's that, you know, like, if you can find, you know, like, I guess it's always that question, like, what is enough?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, if you can find that balance between, like, "Hey, man, like, I put my ass into my business, and my business does well, but I don't want to spend 80 hours a week for 10 years while my kids are growing,"
right,
"and then I don't, and then, like, they're gone." It's like, for what? And then, you know, versus, like, the Anderson playbooks, like, okay, you got blah, 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 and yeah, then you scale it up, and you know,
well,
and then, like, you
I
exit.
Think,
like,
and probably, maybe I know my limitations more than people,
well, that's
give
a good,
me credit,
dude, that's
for.
That's a good thing, man.
Like, my buddy Mike Monin, another Sticky Fingers guy,
yeah,
whom we all looked up to at Sticky Fingers, and I mean, I, with the exception of Jeff, Chad, and Todd, there's probably not another guy in the organization who did more for, you know, propagating the brand and the food and the food quality than Monin did. He's just he's a ball breaker, hard worker, and he's smart as shit. And he's got, I don't know, but I say, 6 or 7 concepts now in Chattanooga and Nashville and some other places. And those guys just are really good at finding people to run places for them.
Yeah.
I mean, I would work for the guy any day of the week. I just feel like for me, that's the hardest part, is I can't be at two places at once. And, you know, am I here all the time? No. But am I here every day? Sure. I just feel like it's, I don't know, maybe it is lazy, but I just feel like if I'm going to open one place doesn't make any sense. You need 6 or 8 or 10 and sell it, right? But I think I'm probably better at just being here every day and being with my managers and my staff and these customers than I would be if I could only be here one day a week.
Dude.
And at 5 other places, you know what I mean, the rest of the week.
I mean, you've built a freaking institution.
It's
like, you built something
crazy
that people come from all over to go. I mean, dude, you've been on my – I mean, we came down here a day early because I've always wanted to come to Taco Lou.
Oh,
like, I mean, like, literally, like – so you've built an institution. You've built something that's – because it's one location, it's, you know, it just drives this demand. Like, it's the only freak, like, there's only one.
Right.
Like, and I think it's, I mean, dude, I think it's incredible what you've done.
Thank you. I do too.
The fact that you're still able to.
If we did another one, it wouldn't be anywhere near here. I mean, St. Augustine, maybe. Gainesville, maybe. But, and I tell you, the downside of all that is that I've got 2 or 3 people here who, you know, I'm not going to keep them forever. They're going to want to go and do their own thing. And opening a Taco Lou would probably be the best thing ever. And that would be the only time that I would expand. Because you've got great people.
They have a ceiling on.
Like,
yeah.
It used to be two. A couple of these kids who are managers, well, 2 managers here used to work at Sticky Fingers. And we've been here since forever. And the others have been here. Cash has been here almost 13 years. And Eric's been here since day one. He was working somewhere else. I met his mother.
Who's been here for 13 years?
My GM, Eric Douglas. He's been here. He was the second guy I hired.
What'd you call him at first?
Eric Douglas.
I thought you said Cash.
Cash is the tall, blonde girl who works here.
Oh, yeah.
She's been here
Cash.
About almost.
Her name is Cash?
Well, Caitlin Ash.
Oh, you call her Cash.
Caitlin Ash.
Okay.
Cash. That's just short. I think at the time we had about 5 Caitlins, so we had a Caitlin Ash and a Caitlin. So you got Cash and Ginger. And
well, you caught my attention. I'm a Johnny Cash fan, so
no.
I was like,
no, not that Cash. That would be cool, though. That would be cool. You know, this kid here grew up with my son as a little guy. It's just, it's weird. Being open for 15 years is weird. And to even hear myself say that is weird. And Sticky Fingers was, you know, 1999. There's so many kids. I don't know if you saw during, and I do not cannot take credit for this, but I love it. From February 1 to February 14, we do the Lou Love stories, and this woman who does so much stuff for our social media has thought of it, because so many of these kids that, like Cash and Chris, my kitchen manager, are married. They met here, and so that's sort of is what the Lou Love story is. People who worked here and either got married.
Yeah, or that's awesome.
They don't have to still work here, which is cool, because now we're calling people and going, hey, you know, you worked here and you met so-and-so or whatever. And so and there was a lot. And we kind of expanded in the last year to people who had their first dates here or blind dates here or whatever. And then they went on to get married. So it's kind of cool between February 1 and 14. And then for some reason, she always wants to end it with me and Debbie. And, you know, that's got to get old after a few years. But now we got people going, oh, but, you know, they're like, well, we had our first date. Well, all right, next year we'll put you on the list.
Well, you know, I was talking to David on the way down here. I feel like social media is an interesting thing for restaurants, because for a while it was like, post pictures of your food. And mm-hmm. like, that, you know, that it's everybody does that.
Right.
You know, like, now, I mean, you can put your, well, like y'all can put your food right there on your site with pop menus.
Right,
so
right.
That's cool. And you've got all these tools that like do that. But I feel like restaurants are just starting to get to where I think this can and should go, which is, and I'm not even a social media guy. I mean, I freaking carry a flip phone around.
Let's still talk about your phone, right?
But I do have kids, right? And they're all on it, and I look at what they do. So they're on it constantly. But here's the thing. I'm convinced that, like, social media, when used wisely, can be this incredibly powerful tool. And
sure.
I think restaurants, y'all have, of any type of business, you have the ability to maximize social media like nobody else can, because you have, first of all, I mean, you have every day, like, you have stuff happening that's interesting.
Right.
Every freaking day.
Yeah.
Not like, first, you got the whole story of your building and all that's going on here, but you got, like, all these interesting people that are working here.
Yeah.
They have interesting lives outside of work. They're hustling. They're serving the public. Whether they're cooking in the back or they're up here, you've got, like, this constant story you can tell,
right?
Like, and
there's no end.
It never stops, and it's interesting stuff. Like you have like the most diverse, eclectic, interesting group of employees in the restaurant world, particularly in independent restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, where you don't have sort of the chain, top down sort of corporate structure. Where you've
right.
got people that come here are like, I don't want all that,
right?
And they're probably fascinating and interesting outside of work,
sure.
and they bust their asses, and like, it's cool people. So it's like, if you can start to share those stories and like what's going on here and who they are and what they do and what, then all of a sudden people
yeah.
start getting attached to not just your restaurant but the people there. And I just feel like that's where social media can go.
I
think it's a
thing
fascinating thing that
Lindsay Nolan did, who is, I gotta tell you a funny story about my
can I get another beer?
Sure. My shitty experience with social media was, you can see there's just a strip of grass that goes along the street out there. Well, somebody kept putting in those like real estate looking signs, and it would be maybe a coin show one day, or it'd be a who knows what, you know, car show or whatever. Well, one day it was this perfectly gorgeous day, and I go out in the front, and I take a picture from the street to the front of the building, and it's blue sky, building's great. And the sign was this stupid sign from some guy, Dr. Green, who's like this medical marijuana guy or whatever. And the picture was gorgeous, the sky was perfect, whatever, and I just said, man, I wish people would stop putting stuff in my yard. This is not, you know, it's not public property. You can't just stick whatever you want, whatever. And like 2 days later, somebody goes, man, you're getting your ass handed to you online. I go, what for? For the post. And I go, what the hell is it? I pull it up, the first thing I see is, oh, you probably don't support a woman's right to choose. And I'm like, so I start scrolling back. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Like, did I get hacked? Because I'm thinking, you know.
Right.
And it just turns out it was this Dr. Green, and it's, so now everybody thinks I'm like anti-marijuana or whatever. And I'm like, you know, and at the time, 4 or 5 years ago, I had a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old. And I voted for legalization. You know, John Morgan from Morgan & Morgan was a big supporter on the radio and all that. And I voted for it. But, you know, I got kids. I'm not going to sit here and be pro. I mean, the last thing you want is for your kid to be a pothead.
Yeah.
Even though I do believe in the plant or whatever. Not a big marijuana user myself, but
I'm right.
So, I mean, I just got, so I got bullied. Like, and I mean bullied. I was like Maverick. I couldn't post another post. I'm like, I can't get back in the cockpit and put a, so this girl calls me, Lindsay, and she says, I can keep that from happening to you. I'm like, come on. Because, and I've always thought of myself as a really good, I was putting out a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, you know, it's my voice and it's me. Everybody knows it's me.
Yeah.
And so, and she knows this because she's smart and she's great at this. So she's been with me for doing this for a couple of years now. I mean, and she's awesome. Lou, love stories is her thing. The other thing, which you were just talking about, is, you know, we get, everything says, who is Lou?
Yeah.
Well, Lucy's my daughter and she's Lou. And she was three when we opened this place. So who is Lou? Well, we, last year, right after COVID, we started doing this thing called I Am Lou. And it would say, who is Lou? And it would be a like a profile of an employee. And we started with all the kitchen people and everybody been here for a long time. And we knocked out, I don't know, 10 or 15 or 20 people. And then I got busy and forgot about it. But I'm bringing it back because I think
I remember it. And it's awesome. A cool, I think you guys are really, really good
at
that.
That was fun. You know, and it was that time when all this stuff was happening. And, you know, we want people to know that there's people in the kitchen that nobody knows about. And nobody sees the kitchen guys or girls back there. But yeah. Bartenders, everybody does, and the hosts and the servers. So we started with those guys. And
yeah.
Because the truth is, they're the ones pumping out all this food for 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
And the bartenders are, you know, bartenders.
Yeah.
They look good.
Yeah.
And they work hard. That's it. Everybody knows them. You know, they're the big pleasers in there.
I think if I were a bartender or a server,
shifts a week.
I don't know what
make a ton of money and have 3 days off.
I don't know what's
going to be done with it.
I'm about to say what I would do with my social media, and I don't have it, but I feel like I would use it. Like I would hope that I would be smart enough to go like, okay, I'm a bartender in this awesome restaurant, and this restaurant has a following, but I want a following.
Yeah.
Like I want people to follow me, the bartender, because I want to use, like, I've got the inventory, I've got everything I need. Yeah. The restaurant's giving me these tools for success, and I want to hustle and I want to meet my customers. I want my customers to follow me. I want to tell them what's going on here. And I want, like, I think social media can be,
sure,
you can build your, like, turn your personal brand. Like it, you know, I mean, people do it at scale and have 15 million followers, but you can do it as a bartender and have like tons of people that are like dialed into like what's going on. And
this one here works here. Yeah. And on Monday nights, so we're closed Monday. She works at this. I didn't even know it was there. I just saw it the other day. It's a pool hall, but it's like 20,000 square feet. It's huge. Holy cow. Drove by. I was like, well, maybe not that big, but it's, I saw that. I was like, oh my God, that's where she works. And you know, you'll see it on Friday. Hey, you know, like a wheel post, but they'll be like, hey, it's me and Jordy in the bar, come see us tonight, or Sam or whoever. So they do that a lot. And you know, I'd rather be on our, you know, Taco Lou Instagram, but they'll put it all over the place. And Josh, my kitchen manager, has his own page. He's a big, obviously, foodie freak. And when he's working on stuff, he'll post it on it. I'm like, listen, you got to send that to me or Lindsay. We want to put it on our Instagram too. And a lot of times she'll just pump his stuff out on you know, whatever he's butting around, pork belly or lamb or whatever. You know, we get a big box full of duck breast in, and I'm taking pictures and. It's fun. We have a great duck taco. It's so few and far between that nobody ever expects
it. I didn't have
it.
A duck taco.
No, no duck
have
today.
Freaking great.
No duck today.
I like the. I will have to say I never would have thought of having a scallop taco. And that was freaking good.
So
that was good.
Brisket was the absolute first thing I knew was going to be on the menu. I have a whiteboard in my house, and I'm like, I saw it in a. Shit, what's that guy's name? The barbecue guy, Rick Reichling or Rick Reich, something like that. The barbecue doctor. He did this lamb.
There's so many barbecue guys now.
He did this lamb thing, and I got it from him. But then I found this brisket. It's like braised in beer, whatever. And I did that at home, and I knew that was going to be the first thing that we did on the talk on the thing. But brisket and like people who are first timers, like try the brisket and try the scallop taco.
Yeah.
Because I think they're great, and yours looked really good when I saw it earlier. It's just, it is a little weird. Sometimes we have these we start with these big three scallops, and basically they're all the same. So, but now they're all like odd sizes. So you might get four or five or six of them on there. I hate when there's a little bay scallop, so we try not to get those. But it is delicious. I think it's a good taco. A little avocado, our cilantro, lime, vinaigrette, and cabbage is all it is.
It's really good, man. Very good.
Right out of K38's. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
The fish taco at K38, though. Little fried. I never seen anything like it. And I didn't go to California and surf when I was a kid. My mom's from Sacramento. We never went down south at all. But that little fish taco blew me away, and that's what we have on our Baja fish taco now, and the scallops. We got a lot of fish tacos.
You surf now, don't you?
Didn't
you
tell me a little bit. I kind of got back to playing golf more. This is what I did as a kid more. But
you play a lot of golf when you were young?
Yeah, yeah. My old man worked for Arnold Palmer. And that's how we ended up in Chattanooga, is the golf club manufacturing arm of Arnie's Army, if you will.
Really?
And one of my best friends, who does all our taco loops, but his dad was the president and my dad was the VP. They moved to Cincinnati when we were two. So we've known each other, me and Andy, for a long time.
But, wow.
So, you know, he was for 10 years he did that, and then he ended up getting his own business and selling the club's retail. And so, you know, I had a set of clubs this big, and I played high school and college golf. And I took probably 20 years off, you know, for work and kids and all that. And then about 2012 or 13, I started playing with a buddy's member guest here in town. And then somehow I got roped into this trip to Ireland every 2 years, which is maybe 8 of the greatest days of my life for a year. For 2 years, you know. I was like, first time I went, I'm like, shit, I don't even know if I could play 8 days in a row. I haven't done that since college.
That's a lot of golf.
But, you know, when you have nothing to do, except get up in the morning, have breakfast, get on a bus, go to some killer links golf or even regular old head or K club or something, and then you play golf 15 or 16 of your buddies, and then you get in the bus and you go back, and then you have dinner and you go to bed. Because the 25 or 30 years prior to that, if I played golf, I'd get my ass there in the morning, and I'd haul ass from the club, and I'd work a shift at night. Or I'd work all morning, and I'd try and go make a play in the middle of the day and come back at night. And that's no fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. It's fun if that's all you got.
Yeah.
And for years, that's all I had. But then now that the kids, Henry and Lucy, both head faked me, and I thought they were going to play and play a lot, but they didn't. Because
that's the thing I always found. None of my kids got into golf. Like my boys are just. I mean, they're 16 and 13. They're kind of wanting to. I'm like, yeah, I'll go play. Like I didn't want to play when they were young because if they didn't, you know, it's such a time suck. It's like if your kids are young and you want to have time with them and then you're gone for 8 hours or 6 hours on a Sunday, it's like, I'd rather just.
I was only playing events we catered. You know, and I'd take the food and I'd play golf and I'd come home. And it is. You're right. And my dad, and my mom will bitch about this forever. Dad was on the road 5 days a week, and he would come and he'd play golf Saturday and Sunday, and she would just be like,
different times back then.
Well, but you know, I never thought, like, when he came over and played golf, I thought, oh, you know, and that was our time, or we'd go back or whatever. But by the time you get to be at least able to drive, you know, and then I'd caddy for him, and we played a lot of golf. We played member guests together. It was fun. I never held it against him. I never knew anything different,
right?
I got along pretty well.
I feel like I'm around so much, my kids are like, listen, I don't even know I'm
that's
here
fine.
Right now.
Like, my house is a minute and 15 blocks from here. I can be home in five. I ride a bicycle here sometimes. And Lucy is a lacrosse player and all of them. I get up early in the morning before she goes to school at 7.
Yeah.
And my dog has probably woken me up already. So I'm up, but then I want to be home and between school and practice or whatever, and then I can come back here if I want or not. But I thought, you know, and my dad never went to anything, and like he went to basketball games and stuff. He was in town, but he was out of town. But he never went to, you know, the stuff after school. But we live at this beach, and everything's so close.
Yeah,
I could leave work. I'd leave. There were times I'd leave a hostess like at 16. I'm like, listen, I got to go do something at Henry's school. I'll be right back. You're in charge, you know. And we had cell phones, so that wasn't that big a deal. But I feel like I didn't miss a lot of that stuff, and I feel the same way. I feel like they're probably tired of me being around. Like, wouldn't you want to go home and just have the house to yourself? Like, my mom never worked. My dad was gone.
Right.
But I would come home and mom would be – actually, she went to school. And she did work. That's not true. She had her own little shop. But I bet Lucy and her friends wish that they'd come home and I wouldn't be sitting on the sofa or running the dog or playing with a motorcycle or something. Because I do have the ability to be home certain times of the day if I want, and then I can always just turn around and come back to work. So that is funny, and I feel the same way. Well, and I love having Lucy and her friends over, and so for me it's a treat, but they're probably like, damn, dad's here again. But you know, maybe not. You never know. You never know what those kids are thinking.
They'll look back and be really grateful for it one day for sure.
So.
But it's definitely it's a different time now.
Yeah, you know, I never held my own.
No,
I never felt bad about my dad not being able to. He went to all the games and stuff, but like, you know, he was working.
Yeah,
that's not like he was, you know, off gallivanting around whatever. It was just the way it was.
Yeah.
That was fine.
Yeah. I think my kids all know I'm gone for a few days. I'm pretty sure they know.
Yeah.
They'll probably be like,
I get home, where you been? Oh, I went to Ireland for a few days. But I'm
Ireland,
back.
Ireland for 8 days every couple years.
That's a big trip, yeah.
Well, that means you got good people here that you can rely on.
Definitely.
That's a long way to be.
And, you know, I was just thinking about this. At one point, my son gave me a birthday card or a Father's Day card or something. He sits in the seat, admires my work ethic. And I thought, man, you don't even know my work ethic. I don't even work anymore compared to what I
used. Compared to what it was when you were hustling.
Yeah. When we opened the Lou in 08, he was six. I was there from open to close for 2 years, you know. Yeah. And we still, it was just me and Debbie at the time. That's why we close on Mondays. Yeah. So we'd have Monday off, but Monday's the best day to get anything done. And I'd be there most of the day. But I just, you know, I don't know if he's just bullshitting me because he's a 21-year-old little, or however old he was, probably 15 or 16 at the time. And I'm just like, man, I wish this kid had really seen it when I was, because even at Sticky Fingers, you know, you get to work at 6, somebody's unloading the pit, and you're just there all day because you had to be. There was a time when I couldn't take a day off. Heather Ann would work open to close on Tuesday. I'd work open to close on Wednesday so she could have a day off.
Do you have your kids worked here?
Yeah, they both do.
Yeah.
Henry did a lot more, but he's got a girlfriend, and the girlfriend is taking over, and
he's got to make money.
He works here once a week, and he makes a lot of money on that day. Lucy is a host and training serving. She just turned 18, so. But it's lacrosse season, so she's not.
Yeah.
And I've never known a kid. She's a senior. I've never known a kid to freak out about her grades as much. So work is third place.
Yeah, okay.
Trying behind grades, lacrosse, and work. But she knows she needs money.
Is lacrosse big down here?
No. Yeah. But
is she going to play in college?
No. She could, but she's worried about her grades.
Oh, so she wants to.
She got in Florida and UF. I'm excited about that. And she was all but going to FSU. But, I mean, Florida State and UF. But she was all but going to Florida State, but we're going to go visit University of Florida Saturday. I mean, the 2 days before TBC, and I got to go be gone for a day to take Lucy to, not to take, but to like drive around campus.
Yeah.
Her friends are all going to FSU, and so that's what she wanted to do. I'm like, that's really not a great reason to pick a college. And, you know, Florida State's a top 20, whatever, state college, and Florida's top 5. And they're big schools and hard to get into. She's smart. I mean, I don't know where, I guess maybe it skips a generation. I'm not sure my mom's that smart. She might be.
That's
but she works here and she loves it. And all her, you know, all her friends work here now. And it's, and there's never, when those two are here and I get to be here at the same time, it's the greatest night ever.
Not bad.
Just so, because, you know, and they probably hate when I go, hey, this is Henry. Come here, I want you to meet these people. And everybody, you know, how many people you know. And Lucy gets this is the Lou from the Lou all the time. And the stickers that you got to take the I am Lou sticker. Who is Lou sticker? She loves that. But she's used to it now.
Well, I always feel like my daughter's got a job in a restaurant right now. And I've told my kids, I'm always like, God, I want all of you to work in restaurants. And I want you to work in independent restaurants at some point. Because, A, if it's an independent restaurant, you're going to know, like, you'll literally know the person who owns the business.
Right.
And it's like their livelihood, their baby, their passion, their joy, and you'll learn a lot. You'll see how a business works and how people that own businesses and like, so there's that piece, the independent part, but then just the restaurant part. I always feel like if you can figure out how to manage being in a restaurant on a busy night when you're in the weeds and things are just going freaking crazy, and you can keep your head, keep your customers happy, work well with your teammates, like, if you can manage through that, there's not many situations that you're going to get into in your professional life down
college
the road. If you, like,
work,
you're like, I'm overwhelmed right now, because it's like about as overwhelming as it can get. Unless you're like, I mean, like that in a like emergency operating room.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's not many things where it's like, holy crap!
And
like,
but if you do find yourself in that position, there's 15 other people around, and the host, and you know, two or three managers to help get you out of it. And the worst thing you can do is not tell anybody you're in the weeds. But you're right; it is. From the social skills, my kids' personalities, and you know, when you say, "Hey, our friends are over here," I'd like to go, you know, and then you work here a few months, and it's like, "Hey, what do you want me to do?"
Yeah.
I'll go see anybody you want, and they go, you know, they shake you shake their hands. And I remember my parents like, "Remember, shake his hand, look him in the eye," which you know you do, and then later on they go, "Mr. and Mrs. So and So said you guys have the nicest manners, you know, and I wish you would."
Isn't that one of the coolest things you ever hear?
It is, and having those two here. But I'm telling you, just a few weeks into this job, and they're like different people. You're seeing from being a host. And the host stand is one of the most difficult positions in the building. You see every face coming and going. They're mad they've been seated. They're mad they've been waiting. They're mad they're hangry. You know,
they're hangry. They haven't gotten their food yet.
A lot of people take that out on the host. And so it's hard. And, you know, they're all little kids because they can't serve to their 18-year-old. But it really honestly did not take too long before I noticed a big change in Henry and in Lucy.
Yeah.
As far as them being confident, I think is a really good way to put it. Confident enough to any adult, any group of people. And now out in the wild, it's the same way. She's not at all shy. You know, it used to be like, oh, nice to meet you. Now it's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, man, this job is, you're growing up. So, and you know, there's a lot of pitfalls in this business too, but it's, if you keep your wits about you, then it's a great place to be. And you make a lot of money. And you work 4 or 5 hours a day. And
very, very transferable skills and almost anything else. I really believe that.
I agree. 100%.
I really do.
Hundo.
Dave is down there reading his book. Just staring on.
He's trying not to eavesdrop. Let's see if I can get Lizzie's attention.
So
I get us two more beers.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely.
Here comes Alex. Hold on. Can you get two more lagers for us, please? Thank you. I don't know who's taking care of this section, but he's ignoring us. What's David drinking? He's looking at a cocktail in his hand.
He is.
Hey, what is that? An old
fashioned? What are you drinking there, Tyner? David, what are you drinking?
What is that? Old fashioned? Yeah.
Oh, the Oaxacan old fashioned, little mezcal. Mmm.
Oh, mezcal.
So that's all mezcal. Those last two sections.
Oh, wow.
Of the bar are mezcal, and that's all tequila. I know.
Oh, it does. Uh huh. I got him a bottle of mezcal one time.
Nuestro Soledad. It's good stuff.
Yeah, there's a. I had never had mezcal, and we have a customer who's got a mezcal. But they have like a smaller
place.
No, it's up in Raleigh called Centro, but they've got a mezcal bar upstairs. It's just all mezcal.
Oh, cool.
And I went up there one time a few years ago and sat down with a dude, and we drank mezcal and did a podcast episode.
Oh, cool.
I probably had too much mezcal. But it was really good. But I didn't know the story. I didn't know how it was made. Like, there was a whole, I mean, it's quite a fascinating process.
It is amazing. And tequila, I think they got it all over tequila for so many reasons. And I'm super nerdy about it. Debbie and I have been, we were in the first class. There's some stuff on the wall over there. The government of Mexico created this program basically to propagate mezcal and try to get it out of the tequila's little nasty cousin into the mainstream and all that. So we did a couple classes in San Diego, one in New York. We had to spend a week in Oaxaca. And so it took a couple years to do it. And we were the first graduating class. The guy that owns Scorpion Mezcal was like running it, Dougie French. And so we did, I mean, you talk about immersive stuff, especially going down there. Because down there we had to do agriculture, horticulture stuff, like the nurseries and the, not necessarily the harvesting it, because you do that almost everywhere you go. But it was really eye-opening. And you really learn a lot about, because, you know, most people know tequila is made with one variety, the blue agave, Weber agave, whatever. Mezcal can be the Weber blue, but it can also be all the others that have enough sugar to make a mezcal or to make alcohol. And so once you start digging deep into that, and you like wines, you know, you got red wines all across the table. One's a Pinot Noir, one's a Cabernet Sauvignon. You know, Tobola is different from Tempestate, from Madrequiche, whatever. I can get super nerdy on it, but I'm not going to. But I think that, and you know, for the most part, except for the big tequila mezcal houses, they're all 42, 44, 48, 50% alcohol, which, you know, you're not drinking it for a straw. You're sipping it, or it's in a little thing. I think that, to me, is one of my favorite things to drink is mezcal. And I feel like it's, you know, like drinking a Red Bull instead of, and tequila is obviously different because the sugar is all that, but mezcal is almost, I mean, when you, I feel like we'll sip it and just feel like, man, let's just get this night going. You know, or as a margarita. If I do two margaritas, I don't go to bed.
Right. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, I use, too much sugar and citrus and all that.
But do you go to Mexico a lot?
I have not since COVID, but we went many times before that. And that week in Oaxaca, we did training, and we went to some lady who was a chef, and you know, we did tequila, mezcal, and foods, and we did cocktails, and we did the nursery stuff, like the agriculture and stuff. So yeah, I've only been to Oaxaca once, and then we were supposed to go right before COVID to where were we going? We're going to do cenote, like the west, eastern side, and like near. But you don't do a lot. There's not a lot of tequila production near Yucatan and all that. I mean, there's some big houses over there, but for the most part, it's Jalisco and central and western Mexico. But I had to literally the last minute had to bail, and I couldn't do it. And then next thing you know, nobody's going anywhere. So
yeah,
we are. Yeah. I want to take half this crew. I would love to do it, but we can't shut this joint down for a week. And I have to shut it down to do the kitchen floors again, but we won't be able to leave.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to take everybody to Mexico for a week, but then we won't be able to. Somebody's got to be here to manage that stuff. So.
There's a group up in Asheville. You ever heard of Chaipani?
Uh-uh.
Chaipani, they won like the James Beard Outstanding Restaurant in the U.S.
Really?
Last year.
Yeah. Chaipani?
Chaipani.
C-H-A-I. I was there Christmas 21.
It's
in Asheville.
Especially since they won that in the, I guess it was over the summer. I mean, it doesn't matter what day you go, what time of day, there's a line. It's crazy.
We were supposed to stay on some mountaintop, and we were leaving Jacksonville. We weren't past the Jacksonville airport, and the people called us and said, hey, we got snow last night and ice. The people in the house now can't get out.
Ooh.
And they can't get out until further notice. So, ensuing conversations on the way up, one was like, man, this lady was like, she goes, man, you Floridians don't understand ice. And we're like, what do you mean? She goes, this lady's like, what do you mean we can't leave? Come and get us and take us. I forget what it was. Like, nobody's getting up this mountain. It was literally a double track.
Yeah.
Gravel road up to this steep grade up to this beautiful little house on top looking over it. And when we got there, it was still snow everywhere, but it was gone. It was mud. I'm like, man, there's no way you get up and down this thing. And so they had to stay in the house. These people were there, and they're so mad about it. She's like, why don't you come and get us and take us down the mountain? He goes, there's no getting up. It was just funny. And the guy's blaming Florida people. Like, you Florida people don't get it. I'm like, well, we get it. So we ended up going to Asheville for two nights in a hotel in Asheville, and I mean, it was tons of people from here, everybody just sort of who couldn't get to where they wanted to go or whatever, and so we spent 2 days and got, but it was weird because everything was still sort of half open and half closed, and unfortunately, all I heard about was, you know, Asheville's music scene is insane, all these years, there's 20 places to see a band every night, nothing when we were there, like, and they weren't doing it, I mean, nobody was gathering, and even though it seemed a little late in the whole deal, but that's the Florida perspective.
Well,
don't hate us for that.
They do have a great music scene. They got some great restaurants up there. But the reason I mentioned Chaipani is because Marwan, who started that place, he grew up in India, and every year now they've got multiple concepts. Like they've got a group with, I don't know, 300 or 400 employees or 500.
Is it all Indian, or is that the mezcal bar?
No. Chaipani's Indian. They got Badawala. They do have a barbecue place called Bucks and Hall, but that was. But he brought in like this barbecue chef to do that. But anyway, my point is like he takes somehow over the last couple years. They have like a contest. I don't have no idea how they do it, but it's an internal staff contest, he takes like 10 of their staff members to India. Once a year,
the winners of the contest
for like 10 days or something like that, and they go back because you know to connect with like the roots of like they're doing and all that kind of stuff. But I thought that was a really cool like, and they all are like, I don't, you know, it's like a big deal
that's
if they win and get to go, and I'm sure
that
it's
probably
like,
gets pretty cutthroat trying to get win that thing.
It's probably not
competition
very cheap
around here would go up a level if we did that.
Yeah,
you know, all the great dudes who aren't. Like me, who aren't Mexican, like Rick Bayless, are guys that I've not that because he's not Mexican, but you know, he's got a bunch of experience and a bunch of restaurants, and he's brilliant. But he goes to Mexico, like, same thing. He closes, everything takes everybody. There's not a lot of people. I mean, there's like 40 seats in some of those places. But I've always wanted to do it. We just haven't been able to do it. But that's one of those things where if you could, I mean, I've been to distilleries and these trips with one or two people. Like, we'll take a couple bartenders, that thing in New York, Spirits of Mexico, or we take, or Tales of the Cocktail. You know, that's a big industry event. That's a shit show, if you'll excuse me, in New Orleans, which, you know, what isn't? I'd be 400-pound alcoholic if I lived in New Orleans. But when you, the thing is, when you do that, and that's, and I've only done it on that level, it's incredible. The kids come back just like the king of the world. I just got the boss just took me to New York, and we did this Spirits of Mexico thing. We had tastings in Harlem and all, you know, down in the Lower East Side and stuff. And
well,
great stuff. And they come back, and they, and really, I mean, it's like you're investing in them, and they come back, and all they want to do is teach everybody what they learned or sell everybody what they learned. It's really something I wish we could do more often.
That's the piece of like, how do we keep these people? Like, what do we do to, you know, it's amazing how much you all have to do now. I feel like as restaurant owners to creatively find ways to keep people, to, you know,
I mean, I could send a group without me, but that wouldn't be any fun.
No, man, you gotta be there. You gotta be, you could take them to a mezcal, like a farm or whatever.
Yeah,
well, we've been at this an hour. I want to respect your time, dude. This is awesome.
Hey,
I'm
thanks.
So freaking glad.
That I'm glad you're here. This is so cool.
I love this, man. I can't believe. I guess I'm gonna go buy Sierra Grill. I gotta go buy there.
Well, they got a new one up on Atlantic. Like,
that's their
the opposite side of where you're staying, but the original one's still down there.
Right there in that Target shop.
It's been there since I got here. And so when we opened Sticky Fingers in '99, there was a Sierra Grill right there, and I'm like, yes, there's a taco place right next to this place. So I was coming down from Charleston back and forth. I'd work at Sticky Fingers. Like, I was working in the furniture store, Sofa Superstore. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'd work Sticky Fingers Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and I'd drive down here Sunday, and I would keep see what's happening at Sticky. Because we were just tearing it down, right?
That's
my brother was here, too. And hey, bye, guys. We'll see you. And I come down one day, and the Sierra Grill sign is gone. And my brother's, I'm like, Doug, what the hell just happened? He goes, I don't know. Sign came down, and they're gone. I'm like, damn it.
Oh, so they did expand. I was always wondering why they only had the one.
Well, they had that. They had, well, this is 1999. So they had that one, and they opened this one, and they had one, I think, across town. But this one happened to just, I guess they, I don't know why they closed, but they closed. And then the funny thing is it was the Starbucks, and I'd never been to a Starbucks. So I was kind of excited that we got a Starbucks in the parking lot at Sticky Fingers. So that, I mean, isn't that weird? That's like almost 20 years ago.
Imagine.
Can anybody imagine that?
No.
And at one point, they were right across the street. There was one in our parking lot and one right across the street where Starbucks is now. And they had two of them within, 60 yards. It was crazy. So, anyway, but they just, I don't know, Lauren was telling me that they're back on. They just opened this big place, a new, I haven't even been in yet, but it's only been open for a few weeks. So, but I like it. I'll do it.
Love it, man.
It's hard to walk into another taco place around here. People give me a bunch of shit, but I love it. I eat it all the time.
Good. Rising tide lifts all boats, man.
That's right.
All right, brother. Well, thank you. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate the time.
See you at Pete's tonight.
Yes, Pete's. That's right. All right, y'all. That's a wrap.